distância capacity. I apologize. Let me start with the last question, or the last issue raised by Honorable Kolabalat. The issue of who's chairing what company is irrelevant. The issue here is whether big, small, or what if there's collusion, let's deal with that issue. But if we're going to be playing that, I don't think we'll remove our eyes from the ball. The fact of the matter is, these big companies mentioned here remain white. White club boys, where certain few black people are put at the top, have no control, they are not in the operations. That is not even the transformation we're talking about. Part of this thing is to want to address those issues. I just wanted to put that for the record. So the issue of who is there is not an issue now. To start spinning people's name, it's unfortunate. Chair, one of the questions which came very strongly was the issue of the relationship of the two processes, CIDB and the Competitions Commission. And what others might see as double penalty. I must emphasize that the competition process does not address the losses which have been incurred by the state, various departments, the entities, the municipalities, the range of institutions. It doesn't address that. Those have a right to put their claims as individuals. But because we are one state, we've been trying to come up with a process where we can act collectively rather than making this thing one by one. There are efforts at another level to deal with those issues and to have those entities consulting amongst themselves. But it doesn't say that as individual entities, through this process of the Competition Commission, therefore, what they've lost has been addressed. It has not. This is just punitive measures, not claims against what has been lost by the various institutions. Equally, CIDB also has the statutory duty, which is distinct and different from the Competition Commission, to institute its own investigations. And the PFMA requires CIDB to pursue misuse of public funds. So the relationship between CIDB and the Competition Commission is about the sharing of the information. That's the relationship. And state institutions have to share the information. And I think you are also right to say sharing that information might also mean confirming the very same processes or the very same funding, because you must do something on your own. But you might be able to confirm what has been confirmed or even take issues beyond where the others left. So that is very important. But also, the CIDB had to wait for what we call Section 5 certificates to proceed to fulfilling its obligations. So that relationship is about sharing of the information. And that is in the spirit and the letter of what you would call intergovernmental relations, because that information must be shared with the provinces. That information must be shared with the municipalities. That information must be shared with the various entities. There was a question which was asked by there was a question which was asked by Honorable Fulton. A very important question. Why did we concede to the state attorney? It it's international practice, Honorable Feitane, that even in a court of law, if there's a dispute between the two parties, if one requests for an out-of-court settlement outside the normal processes, because of the complexity of this process, you're able to give that that process a chance. It doesn't mean that you'll agree to it, but at the end, you must agree to it in your own terms. If you feel that you can agree to it, it will save you the cost. Because one of the things you must not run away from, the cost of this process are going to be enormous. It can be legal action after legal action, appeal after appeal. And top dogs in terms of the lawyers are in one way or another contracted by these big companies. That's the reality. But it doesn't mean that we don't have lawyers. But the reality is that for them, legal fees, it might even be sweet. To us, it means we're sacrificing some of the monies which would be supposed to be using for something else. If there's a way that you can be able to look into what they are offering in terms of a settlement, consider it if it's going to help. Because one of the issues we must talk about, at the center of this problem, is transformation. The companies who are caught here are mainly white, still operating in the old apartheid mode. That's the reality. And what is at the center of this thing? How do you transform this particular process? So, but we will listen to what they are offering, and we will report publicly what they might be offering. And if the executive feels that you must settle with that, we will be able to do that. So we were persuaded by fair practice and in law, because you would be asking court, if the others want to put something for your consideration out of court, why don't you consider it? Because some of the people have been able to tell us that this thing can take not less than 10 years. Moving, because remember how many of these companies are, and the burden of evidence, of proof, must come from the side of government. So it's a very technical, complex legal matter. But I also want to say this thing. When we deal with these institutions, IDT and so on, if you look into their act, and I think this was nice legal jargon, the CIDP is established as a juristic person. And it talks about the independence of the board, and it must perform its functions free from undue influence, including the minister. Because the issue is that some people, if you interfere with those processes, can quickly run into court and say, yeah, they were influenced by the minister to do what to do. What exactly you were saying. Exactly what you were saying about the Competition Commission. They will say it about the minister, that the board didn't act independently. We must allow them to act independently and reach whatever finality they are reaching on this particular matter. It's only when they give a report to us that we'll be able to analyze and talk about the loopholes. Deliberately, we have to be out of it. Otherwise, we'll just be taken to the cleaners in terms of the law. The last point I just want to touch, you see, allocating, Honorable Kopan, allocating enough resources for the CIDP, I mean, if we're talking about this political climate and the Minister of Finance has presented a budget which is cost-cutting, given the political climate, it's not going to be easy. But it would be worse if we're going to spend lots and lots of millions on a legal process instead of on the transformation and the developmental process. We have to keep a balance. We have to keep a balance between the two. That you can't allow people scot-free because they are big, but at the same time, you can't absorb yourself and waste a lot of your resources on this particular matter. We would request given where the processes are, I don't want to use a term which I cannot be able to explain properly, sub judice. You know, we've used it in other forums. It might not be wise at this stage, maybe later on, to state exactly what the state attorney is saying, because there are legal processes which are very sensitive at this stage. Maybe later on we can be able to give such information, because they are acting on our behalf. The last issue, Chairperson. I'm not trying to protect. I'm not trying to protect the CPE, but there might have been a misunderstanding that their coming here today was in relation to finishing up the business of last time. I think the others, CIDP, were very clear that this matter was on the table. To them, they were not clear that this matter for them was on the table. I think that's the reason. But they can still go back and prepare something in order to be able to present it here. And maybe that's why I can say they were caught off guard, but maybe you would expect a person that information is from the top of their head. But I think there might have been a misunderstanding. All the other issues, I'll give them to the DG, the CEOs of the two, the acting CEOs. But maybe the chairpersons must come up front to explain this Hollywood which the chairperson was talking about. Thank you. The chairpersons of the...
Just before we go to the chairpersons of the various committees, I would just like to address the issue of the CBE, Minister. The misunderstanding was not that they were expecting for us to continue where we left off with them. That's not the case. I had a discussion with the chairperson of the CBE. The misunderstanding is they thought that their contribution is in the context of them as the CBE, how they contribute to the processes of the CIDE and the Competition Board. This is why they made the contribution that they made. So they were not caught off guard. They were not expecting us to deal with that matter. So the issue there, there's clarity in regard to that. But where they might not have had clarity was as a entity of the department with another entity and the Competition Board, the synergy as to what's expected from who. So that's an internal issue that had to be sorted out.
That's the last issue before the DG comes in, which I think we've been itching. We've been itching on the issue of legislative amendment. In fact, not just amendment, fundamental altering of the current legislation which is regulating the
entity. Just a minute, Minister. You come to the issue of legislative amendments. There's an issue that I just wanted to clarify that you have spoken to before we go on to the point that you'd like to make. There's an issue that I would like to come back to. We agree that all entities that fall under a department are juristic persons in terms of the law. But there's a fundamental issue. I would like to reemphasize the point that you made, that I also spoke to and other people spoke to earlier on. I emphasize again that it is true that an entity that falls under a department is not a branch. When you look at the annual report of a department, there are branches there. Administration, this and that, personnel. So in that sense, entities that fall under the department are not branches. There's no argument in regard to that. But the Department of Transport has got 12 entities that fall under it. The Department of Energy has got 9 entities that fall under it. And so too the Department of Public Works. The delineation of responsibility is very clear from Cabinet. There's the Ministry, there's the Department, and there are the relevant entities that fall under a department or ministry. There's a board of each and every entity. Correctly, as the minister says that, the function of the board is fiduciary responsibility over the entity. Does it carry out its mission, its vision? And then beneath the board, you have your management. CEO, staff, they have the day-to-day responsibility over the board, over the functions of the entity, not the board. So your board functions are separated, but ministerial responsibility over the entity. The minister, in most cases, has got the authority to appoint chairpersons of boards, and also boards. Quite a number of the members of the board. So while the minister does not engage herself or himself on a day-to-day basis with the functions of the board, the minister still has the responsibility. If there's malafide action in the board there, if the board, the chairperson, is not carrying out his or her responsibility, that becomes the function of the minister to sort out. So then the minister can't say that I'm first waiting until they do. The law says that they are juristic person. We have to be very clear in regard to that. So in my engagement, in the engagement of the portfolio committee even last week, we did say that we respect fiduciary responsibilities of the chairs, the boards, and the functions of management. But we did say that in this hierarchy of responsibilities, if we don't find joy within the management of an entity, the next port of call is the board of the entity. If there's no joy there, the entity is malfunctioning or the board is not carrying out its responsibility, then the next port of call is the department and the ministry. If the DG does not have sufficient oversight there, then we are going to knock on your door, minister, and say that here's a board that's not functioning. You can't plead that independence there. So I just wanted to make very clear our understanding of the hierarchy of responsibilities. Why we'll come knocking at your door if the DG's door is not open or is not carrying out his function. I hope that's very clear. Yes, when we speak about the branches and the entities, there are different levels. Yes, sir.
Very clear, sir. In fact, that's why we've acted in the board. That's why today we have the new chair. That's precisely what you say. We have the same understanding. But let me come to the last issue I was raising of legislation. That's why we're so itchy. It's because of the nature of the legislation. In fact, I can make an assertion that some of the legislation was written in such a way that these entities have become too independent for our liking. They have to go through very long processes whilst the mess is continuing. And with the new legislation we must come up with, we must be able to deal with that. I'm not saying we should not respect the fiduciary duties, but we must be able to call the shots as executive authorities. That's very important. By the way, Chair, and it's not for debate.
some of us are starting to question as to why did we put entities and boards on these things, or even boards. It's a very small thing, you put a board, you put this and that and so on and so on. We need to interrogate some of those. Is it necessary when you want to regulate an industry? You just come up and put another board and so on. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a lot of agencies in the state. So as we move forward debating the policy position and the issue of the legislation, we must come back to those questions. That's the last one I would say. But we're very easy to run with this. But we understand on the year of the election, it tends to be a very short year for legislation. Because we have people rising early and so on and so on. We have been requested to put our own program, which we submit to the cabinet, to be submitted to the executive on the legislation. And I think we have done that. But I think this legislation, it's needed more than yesterday.
Thank you, Minister. Perhaps just a very short sentence on legislation. I would like to remind members of Parliament that the responsibility of members of Parliament is not only to pilot legislation through Parliament. Legislation can come via portfolio committee, can come via the introduction by the minister. But once laws have been piloted through Parliament and they are signed by the president, he grants his assent thereto, that's not the end of the responsibility of members of Parliament. Members of Parliament, in their oversight work, they've got constituencies. Their responsibility is also to look at the ramifications of the laws that we have passed. What are the unintended consequences? There's no law that you can pass and see into the future 10 years hence or 5 years hence. So it becomes the responsibilities of members of Parliament in conjunction with the department and the ministry to look at all the unintended consequences and look at the strengths and look at the weaknesses. Where do we need to tighten up issues of regulations or even the law itself? So this is where legal amendments to the laws come into play. So I'm merely highlighting that fact that we have a further responsibility there to look at what prevails in practice and how laws can be strengthened further, and which laws need amendment. That's still part of the responsibility of members of Parliament. Shall we proceed? The DG and others were to make input.
I'm going to respond to just two issues, and then first, ask the CEO of CIDP to go through all the issues that relate to the presentation that was made. Once if she finishes, then I'll ask the colleague from the Competition Commission to wrap up, and then I will to respond to those that relate to the Competition Commission. Then I will ask the chair of RAMCO of CIDP to deal with the issue that pertains to the acting arrangements and the process. That's very important. So, Remuneration Committee of CIDP. And then my colleague, the DDG, GRC, Governance, Risk and Compliance in the department, whose primary function is the management of the oversight. On my behalf of the entities, to wrap up on what is being done to deal with the governance gaps that have been identified.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Sitole looks very happy.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'll deal with the questions that have been asked by the Honorable Members pertaining to CIDB, and I'll begin with the questions around slide number 9. And then I'll follow from there. So I'll deal with the questions that were asked per slide, and they were, in certain instances, they were asked by different members around the same slide. So firstly, the issue on slide number 9 was the question around the remaining three firms, and that is Group 5, Power Construction and Construction ID, and that in conjunction with slide number 10, the additional 22 firms that had not participated in phase one of the construction fast track process of the Competitions Commission. Chairperson, the response insofar as that is concerned, and the questions that were asked were around the fact that owners need to be nailed so they don't resurface, and the whole issue of why do we not suspend while we are investigating. I think I want to go back to the issue that the Minister covered as well. The limitations in this process are the legislative processes that are governing the CIDB right now. Specifically, the current regulations, as well as the Code of Conduct, do not allow the CIDB to suspend while we investigate. I think it also talks to the laws of this country about people that are innocent until proven guilty. Our processes have a particular process in terms of our CID regulations, appoint an investigating officer and all of those things, and then reach to a particular point where you then utilize the sanctions. So we are not in a position, and the members were raising the fact that they see a lot of boards saying Group 5 and so forth. Yes, you will see those for as long as a conclusion on the issues that we are dealing with in terms of the investigations have not been finalized. Our processes do not allow us to then suspend them from the register or from tendering for government projects. So it's the limitations in terms of the legislations that we are dealing with. So when are we dealing with the three firms and the additional 22? I mentioned the fact that also in our processes, we agreed that we will approach the processes in a two-pronged approach. And the two-pronged, the first approach or phase one of it was to deal with the 15 firms that have paid fines at the Competition Commission, and that's the 15 firms that we alluded to in terms of the slide, the total of $1.4 billion in fines that they paid. And we mentioned that in the first process, the 18 firms that participated in that process, only 15 settled, and the settled is basically saying they signed consent orders and they paid the fines that that were imposed by the Competition Commission. The additional three, and that's the three that did not settle, they basically denied some of the claims that were made against them in terms of, let me make an example. The Competition Commission covered the fact that they operated under the corporate leniency policy as well as the fast track process. Those processes allowed for organizations to come forward and basically admit guilt. But condition of that process was that you need to mention everything and be truthful. The moment another company implicates you on a project that you did not mention when you came forward, you therefore were not covered under the leniency policy. You basically lost your immunity, so to speak. So that was the case with these companies. And in some of the projects that they were implicated under, they basically denied those things, and as a result, they refused to sign the consent agreement. Now, it's not to say that the CIGB will not deal with those particular companies, but they now fall under the phase two process of the competition commissions, where further investigations would then need to be done, and those investigations have been done and they have been concluded. That then brings me to the next point of the additional 22 firms. Again, the additional 22 firms were implicated in other projects that were not mentioned by the firms in phase one. But I need to mention here, Chairperson, that some of the firms that are implicated that came forward in phase one, they are again implicated in phase two. So we are still going to see some of the 15 companies also in the phase two process, which then brings me to the issue of saying, why have we not listed the 22 firms? I think my colleague from the Competition Commission will cover that, but I must say at this point in time that we do have the names now that the Competition Commission has finalized the process. But I also need to mention that our two approaches, they differ in the sense that the Competition Commission focuses on the projects which then bring in the issue of the names of companies, whereas we focus on the companies themselves, because ours is to focus on the register of contractors. So that is the issue there. And then the next one is around slide number 12. How much has been paid to Gobodo? We've paid just over 400,000. So it's below half a million to date with respect to the processes leading up to the investigation on these collusion matters. How was Gobodo appointed? We followed the normal SCM process. We went on tender. We advertised, and this was open tender. We advertised for companies to register in a panel of investigators at CIDB, because we're not dealing only with the issue of the collusion. This is our day-to-day, part of our day-to-day work. So there are various other firms that we are dealing with outside of collusion in terms of investigating on transgressions to our code. So just in excess of 400,000 has been paid to Gobodo in relation to the collusion matter. And then the next one is on slide 15. The issue there was that was raised was around the fines being too small that were raised that were imposed on these organizations. I think my colleague will cover the process in terms of how they got to determining the fines that were imposed on those companies. But if one then goes back to the CIDB processes, again, I'll go back to the limitations in terms of our legislative processes, where I covered that under the current code of conduct that we are using, there are 9 sanctions. And one of those sanctions talks about an amount, a fine not exceeding 100,000. Now, irrespective of the billions that may have been spent in terms of the collusion that happened, we are basically limited by the sanctions that are in the current code, which also then talks to the fact and the need of a review, a serious review insofar as our legislation is concerned. And I need to mention this here, Chairperson, because I think there was a question also or a comment made about whether even our code was benchmarked internationally and whatnot. And the mere fact that 5 of these top companies have taken the CIDB and the minister challenging the legislation that the CIDB operates under. I need to mention that some of the directors of these companies were part of the processes that actually gave birth to the CIDB, so to speak. So they were part of the processes that actually concluded on these regulations, on this act, on this code of conduct, and all of those that are now limiting. I think one honorable member asked about the fact that was there no foresight in terms of what was going to happen. Honorable Chair, I think I will leave the meeting to actually decide in terms of whether there was foresight or not. Perhaps there was, and the foresight was collusion. And those are the things we need to be looking at, because if you look at the sanctions that are there, they are very limiting in nature. They are very minimal, and they don't do much in terms of when one looks at the magnitude of the money that has been spent insofar as collusion is concerned. Now, the issue around slide 21 and 22, if we're now talking about what is 100,000, the answer that I can give is, unless we review the legislation, that 100,000 remains there, and so are all the other sanctions that are available. And I would then therefore say, I do not believe, as I sit here, that the sanctions were actually benchmarked internationally. It just by the nature of how they are and how they were crafted, which then calls for a rigorous review of them. And then insofar as slide 14 is concerned, the issue around the minister not having powers to compel the appointment of an investigative committee, as well as the committee not having existence in law. Again, here what we are basically saying is these are the issues that those five companies are raising to say, CIDB, you cannot deal with us, because we are saying your processes are unlawful and unconstitutional, and these are the issues they are challenging. They are basically challenging the fact that the minister doesn't have the powers. And if one then takes a step back and you say, who were the people that crafted this legislation, some of them are the same people that are now challenging these powers, because they knew then what the objective of what they crafted was. Now, do we mention the CIDB code of conduct in the original contract? I need to mention here that CIDB does not deal with the contracts when these companies tender and do work for government or for the private sector. Ours is in the registration of contractors. And yes, we do publicize this on our website, and it is information that is shared when contractors register on our website the code of conduct. And it applies to contractors that register, as well as the client departments and municipalities that actually, so it deals with a myriad of all the stakeholders and the value chain in the construction processes. I think the minister covered the issue around the view of the state attorney on the collusion issues and the issue around a warring marriage were covered by the minister. I think lastly, Honourable Chair, what I want to cover, what was also raised, is around the issue of double jeopardy and issues that can also be raised. One, we did receive a legal opinion about the fact that there is no double jeopardy in dealing with this case. And also, we need to also understand that the Competition Commission have their own legislation that they have worked under. The CIDB has its own legislation, and it also is important to mention that nowhere in the issues that they are challenging the court have they raised the issue of double jeopardy, because they are aware that we're operating with two separate pieces of legislation. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the honourable members for the questions.
I'll just deal with questions that I think they were not answered concerning the role of the commission in the investigation of the construction sector and its relations with other regulators. The commission is a creature of statute. Competition Act 89 of 1998 created the Competition Commission and other institutions such as Competition Tribunal and Competition Appeal Court to deal with competition matters. So, therefore, the Commission can only do what the law authorizes it to do. Section 21, Honorable Diana Kola-Barnard, empowers the Commission to put measures in place that will assist it to do its work, to come up with guidelines, to come up with policies that will help it to do its work. So the deals that we conclude with firms that are colluding is in terms of the corporate leniency policy that has been published, gazetted, and put into effect to assist the Commission to detect and prosecute cartel conduct. As I said at the beginning, cartel conduct in their very nature are secretive. These are secret meetings that only those that are involved can tell you exactly what happened. So in order to encourage them to do that, then you've got to give away something. And here we are saying we will not prosecute anyone who confessed and tell us that they were colluding with other firms, so we are able to then prosecute the other firms that they were colluding with. So that policy is done in terms of Section 21 of the Competition Act. The issue about us, the Commission, not going after individuals, again, is a matter of law. The Commission can only investigate firms, not individuals. We investigate and prosecute firms. As the law stands now, we do not have powers to investigate and prosecute individuals. The competition amendment is meant to deal with that aspect, and it still has to be implemented. But as we speak now, we can't go after the firms. If individuals decide to shut down the firms, and then we can't go after them. That's where other regulators come into picture to deal with that. To deal with that matter. On the firms that were liquidated, there isn't evidence that they were liquidated because they were facing investigation. They are small firms, grade 4, grade 3, grade 5, that for some reasons of resources and the like, some were liquidated. Of course, there may be, you know, plans, but over a long time you'd want to do that, but we don't have evidence before us that they were liquidated because they were facing investigation. And then they are also not big, as I said. They it's Rainbow Construction. I think it's a grade 3 or grade 4. There's Mica Construction, there's Wascon Construction, there's Ludwig Construction. So these are very small firms that the issue of resources could have played a part. But I think the other regulators that deal with these matters can clarify better. Because we don't investigate why firms are liquidating. We investigate whether firms have colluded. Of course, in the process, when you are saying you are liquidated, we get to inquire, you know, for information's sake, what is happening. We need all the paperwork to see if indeed firms have been liquidated. The 22 firms that are referred to in phase two, I've got the names. I don't know if I have to read out the names or I have to hand them over. I'll take guidance from the from the chairperson. But those, again, they are not grade nines. They are the smaller firm, Harding Allison, maybe BNE International, maybe grade 7, grade 8, Firecard Pipelines, N17 toll operators, Zivcon Construction, Jurisic Coastal Project, Civilcon.
Yeah, to save the trouble, perhaps we could just have the list and have it circulated to the members rather than waste your time reading them all out. Yes? Is that agreeable, Chair?
That's fine. It will be submitted to the committee clerk.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. The fines, the small fine, in the first track, we went out publicly and said, these are the rules that we're going to be engaging on. In order for you to, you know, to participate, you've got to disclose. If you disclose so much numbers of projects, I also have the information. If you disclose four projects, we're going to levy you 4% of your turnover in a subsector. If you disclose projects between 5 and 9, we're going to levy you 5% to so much percent of your annual turnover in the relevant subsector, civil engineering, specialty projects, and the like. So the rules were designed to firstly entice, as we said, that this collusion was rife and we couldn't investigate each and every one of these and still finish it timeously or without spending a lot of time. So we had to come up with a plan. The plan that was going to help us root out the industry of the collusive behavior. And this was really prompted by the initial information that we received, which indicated that collusion is rife in the construction sector, and executives admit that it is a way of doing business in the construction sector. They don't know any other way. They've been doing this, and they didn't know that it was illegal. So when faced with that kind of situation, you've got to come up with a plan of how will I resolve all these cases. It's 140 cases, it's only in the construction. There are still cases in other sectors, and you wouldn't have resources to investigate each and every one of them. So that's why then the penalty thing comes from there, that this is how you're going to engage you. And it was, to create certainty, we put it out there. So when firms come, they already know that for this number of projects, this is how much I'm going to pay according to the guidelines that the commission, the invitation that the commission has put it out there. So the fine, we still believe that they still send the message as were required by the law to deter collusion, not to close down firms, but to deter them from colluding. Again, we still think that what each firm paid is sufficient deterrent, but of course we have other measures in place that they shall not, as part of the agreement, they shall not be caught colluding again. They must put in place compliance programs to educate employees, senior and junior, about collusion, and that if they are caught colluding again, it's a second offense that comes with heavier penalty. But most importantly, we have managed to sow distrust among themselves that if they try to collude, anyone who tries to convene, the other ones can decide to come and approach the commission to actually not to be penalized or not to be found to be colluding for the second time. So that we think it will help over long term. But of course we do need more other mechanism to make sure that collusion does not, these guys do not regroup over time. Prescription, this is prescription in terms of Competition Act, honorable member, is not a general law prescription. The Act is very clear, Section 67 prohibits us from investigating conduct that stops 3 years prior to our initiating of the investigation. So anything that puts, so all these projects that we are saying they are prescribed. Our prescription we started counting is from, because we initiated in September 2009, so anything August 2006 backwards would be prescribed in terms of the, in terms of Section 67 of the Competition Act. But this does not in any way suggest that other agencies and victims and they cannot act on this. This is just prescription in terms of the Competition Act. So there may be, you know, other regulations that are transgressed, which this prescription then does not apply to. They can still act on that. Settling, what we mean? We mean that we sit down, we negotiate, that we settle the matter. If we negotiate the terms, we negotiate the penalties. If we agree, we conclude the agreement, we submit to the tribunal, we subject it to judicial scrutiny. The tribunal then confirm the agreement as the order of the tribunal, which has got the same status as the High Court order. Prosecution, what we do is a prosecution through a notice of motion. That's how we initiate proceedings at the tribunal. We file referral, we serve papers on the respondent. The respondent must then submit their file, their answering affidavit. We will then submit our reply to their answer. From there, we close pleadings. After closing pleadings, we will then start engaging in what we call pre-trial steps, discovery, calling for documents, calling for witness statements. That is how we prosecute. And then on the actual trial, we get witnesses on the stand, we question them, and then the tribunal then decides at the end of the day. The standard of proof is beyond reasonable doubt. Marriage, Competition Commission is enjoined by the Competition Act to engage with other regulators to conclude memorandum of understanding about how they're going to be functioning in regulating. So these are not in any way impacting on the independence or integrity of the institution. They are what the law requires the institution to work with other regulators. There were questions from Honorable Member, I think it's Honorable Adams, if I'm not mistaken, about the objectives of the fast track. What we were trying to do is that there is, you can investigate these things, but you'll investigate them for over 20 years because there are many, and then you don't have the resources. So we were coming up with a plan of short-circuiting that process so that at the end of the day, we are able to resolve these matters expeditiously, possibly without having to engage in lengthy prosecution and stuff like that. Of course, there are some that have settled, there are those that did not settle, those that did not settle, we are now prosecuting them, but we didn't want to prosecute everybody that was involved because it wasn't going to be possible or even easier. So I don't know. Outsourcing, we were saying we don't want to, because we wouldn't have the capacity to deal with those things. We want to minimize the use of external resources. In fact, generally the construction, we used internal resources. I was the leader of the team that investigated. It was a very small team. They worked very hard to put those things together. We spent very little in terms of outsourcing. And outsourcing here sometimes is the lawyer to go and at a certain point in court. Honorable Chair, I hope I've covered all the questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you, sir. CIGP, you must utilize the regulations and the law in front of you. It's not going to help you to spend inordinate time saying that your current challenges, people who are challenging some of the provisions that you are utilizing, were in some historical stage the people who drafted regulations and what have you. That's in the past. Right now you are confronted with issues. So all that you can use your time usefully is to implement the laws and the provisions that you have in front of you. It's not going to help you saying that 6 years ago this one was drafting the regulation. That was 6 years ago. Today, he or she is challenging you. So your responsibility is to ensure that the law can meet the mischief that you are encountering. If it can't meet that mischief, it's the responsibility of Parliament to amend the laws to make sure that they can deal with the current mischief. Good folks, it seems this is how far we can traverse down this road today. The cheapest watch in the room says it's almost 5 minutes past one. So, the next time we'll meet, we'll continue further with our program. There's an issue in regard to next week's meeting that I need to discuss with you. No meeting, yes. Yeah, tomorrow meeting. There's no meeting tomorrow as well. This is the last one. Moetapele, me kopane.
Chair, I'm a little bit worried. My question was not answered in terms of the impact or the any analysis study that has been done.
Thank you.
From the Competent Commission side, we will be doing the impact study on the collusion in the construction sector. As we do whenever we finish a big case, mm-hmm. we will do an impact study, but we've got to finish it, do impact study, which will indicate how much the cost overruns, how much the, you know, the collusion resulted in overpricing and stuff like that.
Thank you. Akona, you look surprised. You wanted to know what I said to Honorable Kopane. I said to her that she should have pulled his ear. He's right next to her. Honorable Minister, closing remark, or you can sing the national anthem. You've got the choice.
No. Just shortly. We might not be having the actual figures, but it's well known the impact of overpricing, stealing the resources, which are supposed to be used for something else. And you end up paying billions and billions, which would have used for development in other areas. But I think Competition Commission, as it's saying, they might be able to give us, or also the CIGP, they will be able to give us the actual information on that. And secondly, the question which has not been answered, which I think was very important, the issue of the CEOs. It's as a result of the dispute and where we have to respect the labor laws, that certain things, once they are in other forums, it's like this sub judice thing.
How old is the dispute, Minister? Has it been dragging a year?
I think there's one which is more than a year. Because you see, what happens is you resolve it, somebody goes to the next court, to a higher court. Then once it goes to the next higher court, if you start dealing with the appointment, then it means you have to fight. That has been the issue. And then All I can say, Chairperson, is that this was necessary, and this is necessary. It's a necessary process that we come and account here. And we're able to say you're putting us on our toes. In fact, the new chair now was whispering to me that a lot of positive issues which he has in his mind now. The first issues which he's going to deal with when he comes into this entity to say, let's go to those issues as they were raised by Parliament. So it might be rough, it might be nice, but I think you're raising the issues with us. And we are very alive to those issues. When we come back, there will be an improvement. Thank you.
Minister, we don't want to put you on your toes, we want to trample your toes. Minister, Director General, Honorable Members, thank you very much. Stakeholders, thank you very much. Meeting adjourned. There's iced tea and coffee at the back, it's very expensive.